This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Giddy hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
In the beginning, we had the top down, wind in our hairpins. We buckled up and buckled down, head through the tailspins. With no security, just adventure, with the will to survive.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Coming to you from beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, sitting in beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studio, my studio here in Fort Worth, where creativity is king, where you walk in and leave all preconceptions behind and get a feel for the space and reach for my old 52 Telecaster on the wall, my fake Hofner bass, my fretless Fender J bass, and other things. Pete Coatney's drum kit. You just sit at these inspiring pieces of musical making hardware and let your mind go. That is Trinidad World Recording, and that is where we are. Folks, thanks for joining us here, as you do so every week on the P2 Podcast. So much going on. So much to speak about. So many things in the news. So many things in my life. My work, so many things going on. Where to start? I don't even have a script. You know, I play shows, I never even have a set list. And it was like, yeah, I have a set list, Phil, so we know what we're going to do every night. You know what I tell the band? You know what I tell the people? I'm like, look, you can't go in there to any show with a script, with something the way everything's going to go. You never know. Every show is different. All you fans out there, maybe a couple of you are standing by the front of the stage, and everyone else is just kind of back at the bar chilling out. Some nights, everyone's just pressed against the stage, ready for the show. No one's in the back of the room. You never know what you're walking into on any particular night. So those of you sports fans out there, and probably know Peyton Manning, you know, he doesn't have a playbook. He just calls every play from the line of scrimmage. He walks up, he reads the defense, he looks at the clock, he looks at the score, and he just calls a play by what he's seeing out there. That's how we run the Phil Pritchett Show, man. Just looking out there, reading the defense, reading you, the fans. I stare into your eyes. I assess the mood in the room and just do my best to deliver what is needed at any given moment. If it's Maria or Skywalker or a cover of an old Beatles song, whatever needs to be done, that's what we try to do. So, here I sit before you today, no script in hand. Well, this show is about nothing else if not my struggles, other musicians' struggles with all kinds of stuff. You know, the things that everybody struggles with, money, family, jobs, whatever. I got to play a great benefit at Billy Bob's Texas a little while back. My friend Max Stalling was there. Owen Temple was there. Ran into the great Daryl Dodd was there. We had great talks with all these guys. You know, inevitably everybody sort of opens up, you know, about, hey, I'm struggling with this, or man, we have this, it's tough out there, or this went pretty good. A lot of great, great to see those guys, man. It was a great benefit, for the family of Ruben Martinez, who was a, guy up here in Fort Worth who was killed on the job, delivering, beer for, the Benny Keith Company, a big company here in Fort Worth, that my brother works for. My brother John, so it was a big organized benefit to benefit his family, and it was great, man. It was fantastic. Had a silent auction, and raised a lot of money for the man's family and children. Very sad deal. So it was the least people could do, at least all of us could do, is show up and help out a little bit in a community sense. Larry Joe Taylor was there. Many others. Good times. Good times backstage at the actual event, and did a lot of good. for the Martinez family out there. So thanks to all of y'all who came. I had a lot of emails from people coming out to the show on Sunday and contributing, bidding on those silent auction items and driving some money in the direction of the poor family who lost Ruben. But talking to these guys backstage, the same stuff comes up. One thing that kind of came up talking to, I can't remember which one it was, a couple of them, but you ask me all the time, Phil, what are you dealing with out there? What is some of the most difficult things? Really, man, in the business? Not a whole lot. It comes and it goes. You get paid through iTunes or you don't. You make CDs. You can adapt. You can adapt. Let me tell you what's chewing my ass right now. And I think a lot of people are in this boat with me. Man, insurance. Health insurance. And forgive me if this gets into the political realm. I don't like to go there. And don't read it like this. I'm just telling you the facts as I have it in front of me here. When I first started buying health insurance, I was young, married, had a couple kids. It just wasn't that big a deal. Oh, it was a bite out of your check. I don't know. A couple hundred, few hundred a month. I don't know for basic disaster. I don't know. You know, you just, if someone has some gigantically horrible thing go wrong, you just don't want to get wiped out. That was the whole reason you had it. So that's what we had. I mean, I had other much bigger expenses every month. I'd rent an office. I was paying a band. I had an agent. I had debts to pay, blah, blah, blah. I was making albums in studios with a 2-inch tape. I mean, I had other expenses, man. Phone bills and stuff were even higher than maybe my health insurance at times. You know, back then when you paid for long distance for every call you made, oh my God, it was huge. But my point is it just, man, what the heck is happening, man? I've followed this healthcare debate over and over. The things have inched up for a while, but man, I just got my deal. It is just like doubled. It's renewing here in October for my family. And man, it is just astronomical, man. You're talking thousands and thousands and thousands coming from me every year. And what happens? And the thing is, it really doesn't cover anything. Cause think about it. I'm a self-employed guy. I run my own little empire here at Trinidad World Recording. I'm not part of a union. I'm not working for the government. I'm not working for some corporation. I'm me, Phil. Thanks. A majority of one in the freest country on earth. You hear what I'm saying? Excuse me for getting on the soapbox here. But wasn't the country built on this, man? Weren't we individuals? You didn't have to join a team to get all the benefits, you know, to drive down the price. And look, I'm not putting anyone down working for the government. That's all just great, man. But everyone goes, well, man, Phil, if you want better health insurance, how come you don't go work at, you know, some part-time job so you can have health? I'm like, so I'm supposed to go work some remedial job instead of doing what I do? What I do is, I mean, I can pay it, sort of. You know, I don't have to go work some other job to get free health insurance. Oh, man, what a disaster, dude. What a freaking disaster this is. And just, it's just, it just drives, the premiums have just gone through the roof. I don't know if y'all have experienced this, but everyone I've talked to has. They've passed this law, it's supposed to save everybody money. Dude, it is just driving things through the roof. The premiums are going to go straight up because now these insurance companies are mandated by the government, from what I understand. And maybe I'm wrong. Email me, phil@philpritchard.com. Tell me I'm wrong, please. You know, they have to cover this guy. They have to cover all pre-existing conditions. They can't turn anyone away. Well, what's that going to do? They're going to say, man, we're going to have to raise the rates on everybody. So rates are through the roof. Not only that, it doesn't cover anything. So my problem is, if I'm giving them X thousands of dollars a year, way up there, tens of thousands a year for health insurance, and hey, one of my kids breaks their arm, it's going to cost a couple grand, I can't call them and say, hey man, or maybe not breaking their arm, that might be covered, but if it was something else, an elective surgery, something like that, that's not going to be covered. You know, that's not covering maternity, it's not covering elective surgery, it's not covering dental or vision, or it doesn't cover any of that stuff, really. I can't get the money. I can't call and go, hey man, I sent you 10 grand over here, can you send me $1,000 so I can pay for my, oh no, you're not covered. So I'm paying for the disaster. We're all paying for the disaster insurance. Plus, we're just kind of also paying for all of our medical needs. And it just baffles me, man. I don't know. It's been driving me nuts. Forgive me. You're tuning in here to hear Phil talk about his new album. We're working on that. Let me know. Let me tell you, it's going well. Writing songs. But if you're interested in the business side of it, what's something that's just really challenging, something really challenging for me? It's really not so much music and all this and the whatever, declining CD sales and the tough economy. Forget all that, man. It's all this stuff. And I know y'all all feel the same way out there. Y'all all got your own jobs and medical packages and all that. Gosh, just getting worse, isn't it? More expensive, just paying more for less. And I don't know, just everyone's getting screwed on it. I mean, I got friends that are doctors, man, that just say, man, it is so hard to get paid these days from patients, from insurance companies, from the government, Medicare. The checks are late, you know, we just never get paid for anything. It's a lot of times. It's just like all this stuff's going on. I remember my dad telling me, you know, it's in the 60s, if you broke your arm, it was $150. You know, you went to the doctor, what do you charge me? $150. Gosh, we've always been self-paid. Of course, I always just carry the disaster stuff. I don't pay for all the whatever, prescriptions and all that. Thank God we're a reasonably healthy bunch. We don't have all that. But, man, I've had many conversations with people in medical offices. I'm like, well, man, I'm paying myself. I'm just going to pay. They go, what's your insurance? I'm like, well, my insurance is just kind of a disaster deal. I'm just in here getting a filling. What does it cost? And they get this blank look on their face. What do you mean, what does it cost? I'm like, what does it cost? What could I pay you for the services? Well, the answer is what it costs is as much as we can possibly charge, because we're not going to get the full amount. So they're billing, their insurance company or the government or whoever's backing this deal. They know they're only going to pay about a third of it. So you got to say, well, it's $3,000 if you want to get $1,000, and on. It just makes so what are they going to tell me? A self-pay guy. They're just going to charge me $1,000, or they got to charge me $300, because those rates are based on what they're charging their clients, you know, so they can't go too low with me or else, now I a lot of times get a big discount because they'll say, oh, you're paying cash now. Oh, we'll give you 25% off. So man, I'm existing in this, we got great doctors and people out there working hard. And man, you know, you pay them cash, you write them a check the day of the service. That's kind of what I've been doing. But man, that's all off the grid. That just doesn't include this massive amount of money every month that just gets flushed down the toilet. I'm sure I'll be glad it's there if something really bad happened, you know, but good grief, man. You start to just think to yourself, you know, at the risk and the cost, at what point do you start to just go, now, wait a minute. You know, would I rather just have that money sitting in an account somewhere? I mean, that could cover 99.9% of any health-related thing that would come along, you know, short of just having to, gosh, you know, go to be care-flighted from somewhere. So that's a tough deal, man. Because let me tell you what, you go to the hospital, like when one of my kids was born, you know, maternity's not covered. I'm always just stuck with the bill, whatever that is. They give me the cash discount. But that's a huge, huge number. Huge number. You know what I'm talking about out there, folks. Having those babies, they ain't free. They ain't cheap. But who's in the room next to me, man? Hey, I don't know. Maybe this guy is, he's also writing his check for $10,000 or something. But, you know, he's just shirtless and mumbling in the hallway. And I'm just kind of like, you're telling me this guy's got $10,000 to be in here? Ha, ha, ha. Silly Phil, you're saying to yourself. Of course he doesn't. He doesn't have to pay for anything. Why? Because he doesn't have a job. He's unemployed. He doesn't have any money or whatever. But there he is right next to me, man. I'm just thinking, well, who's the sucker here? They just know I'm good for it. They know I'm out there working and I'm going to write the check. Because I want to do the right thing. Oh, it drives me nuts, man. It drives me nuts. It reminds me of a time, I had this traffic ticket once. I made that from Nashville. I was late getting the sticker changed on my van. So this cop pulls me over and says, hey, man, how long have you been back here? I said, it's been 40 days. He goes, man, there's a 20-day window or 30. So he writes me a ticket for not having the Texas sticker back on my van. Fair enough. So I go to I got to go to the courthouse and stand in front of the judge and, I don't know, some kind of ordeal, and pay a fine. So what do I do? What would any of you do out there? Oh, man, I take a shower. I shave. I put on a tie. I've got a copy of my insurance. I got a copy of my ticket. I got my checkbook. I got a bunch of copies of the new registration to show I've already gotten the sticker changed. I've got everything. I'm pacing in the hallway out here, wringing my hands. I want to make sure I've got everything in order. That's how I was raised, and I know that's how you guys were raised, right? You got to have all your ducks in a row, man. That's how the world works. works. Okay. Well, I go in this courtroom. Well, who's in there, man? There's me and then 500 other people. Of just the people that have a tough time in life, it's safe to say. And man, here they come. They're being paraded in front of this judge, this poor judge. This judge got his head down. He's so beaten down. They're just bringing him in there. They've got a translator in there. And they're just asking every one of them, does he have insurance? No. Does he have a driver's license? No. Is this DWI? Yes, he's sorry, or whatever. And man, the judge just waves his hand. They all just go out the back door, all of them. I don't know where they're going. So I start to feel, and a lot of them, man, are just dressed in, they're just the nation's poor, man. A lot of them don't speak English. They're in there. So I start kind of feeling good in the back of the class. I'm like, well, man, this judge is gonna, he's gonna be relieved to see me show up there with all my papers in order, you know? Well, my name gets called. I go up there. Your Honor, I present. He stands up and reads me the riot act. Don't you know better than this, son? We got this one. We got rules here. You can't be driving around. Reason. And then just, it makes me go pay like an $800 fine. And dude, I'm just dumbfounded. I just turned to the 400 guys who just got let go in front of me. I'm like, dude, these guys were all driving drunk with no, I didn't say this. I dared not. I'm like, these guys were out driving around with no seatbelt on, with no driver's license, no insurance, with a beer between their legs. Some of them were, I didn't have a sticker. But man, then I realized, what's the old poker phrase? If you can't spot the sucker at the table, then you're the sucker. And man, that really changed my view that day. I hope that doesn't make me a cynic or something. But man, you took one look in that room. Who's going to show up in here and write a check? None of these poor guys. None of these guys have any money. Ah, oh, there's Phil back there. Look at him. He's got his checkbook. He's ready to play ball. And so man, I just did what I do, you know. I walked in there and I just wrote that big old check for $800 fine or whatever, plus this or what. And I wrote the check, man. And I've talked to some people of the exact same experience. And it makes me wonder sometimes, man. I got so many great friends that are cops that work so hard, out there protecting us and gosh, just doing God's work out there. But I'll tell you what, man, and maybe this is just me talking, but man, when I'm in a tough neighborhood or something and I'm a cop, who am I looking for? Am I going to pull over the guys in the big car that might have a gun under his seat that I'm going to have to wrestle to the ground? And for what? He's not going to be able to show up and write a check. He's not going to be able to, pay the fine that we're going to give him or whatever. He's just going to... Who am I looking for? That guy? No. That's not the guy I'm looking for. I'm looking for Phil Pritchett, man. I'm looking for the guy in the tie. The guy in a nice car. Who, when I pull him over, is going to say, oh, I'm so sorry, officer. Oh, gee whiz, what did I do wrong? Oh, I'm sorry. I'll try to do better next time. What's the court date? Okay, I'll show up. I'll have my copies of all my stuff in my checkbook. I'll be there right on time. That's the guy I'm looking for. That's who runs the whole thing, man. Someone's got to write the check, and it's always you and me. That's my rant for the day. Health insurance. If you show that you're going to pay, then you're going to pay. Otherwise, it's free. Sometimes I fantasize about just walking around shirtless. And sometimes I fantasize about I'm just going to walk around shirtless, pretend I don't know anything, mumble, and then I just get to walk out the back door and walk out the hospital without paying a dime. That's going to be what I'm going to do. That might be my new MO from now on. Maybe I can get Kurt South in here to opine on that at some point. That's my rant for the day. Sorry for the politics or the whatever. I mean not to upset the apple cart. I'm not on anybody's side on this. I'm just telling you my take on it in my everyday life with the wife and kids trying to make it all work. What makes it difficult? That makes it difficult. Well, coming up in our next segment, we're going to go on a much happier note, a much lighter note, is our good friend Blake Myers. You know him from Texas High Life, one of the very first bands I ever produced, is going to be here. And he's going to be talking about his new record that he and his new band, Rose Hill, same old guys, I think, new name, Rose Hill, made a record with Radney Foster. We'll talk to Blake about his new Radney Foster record next.
Still amazed how those days were numbered. Not making money, just history, one day at a time. We took the straight road to glory, but it started to wind, 'cause history is never made. History is never made. History is never made.
History is never made.
History is never made.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Thanks for joining us this week, folks. We have so much to discuss, so much happening out there in the chaotic world of music. What am I to do out there playing shows, you know, drawing things from out of midair to try and make sense of the world of your life? It is I who try to enlighten your musical life, and many like me. So thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast. Well, who's going to walk in? Anytime you come to Trinidad World Recording in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, you never know who's just going to be moseying outside, swinging by the studio. It's just a place. It's like a light for the moths. It's that beacon of light we talk about here on the podcast. So who should come by but the great Blake Myers, formerly of Texas High Life, currently of the band Rose Hill, and one of the first artists that I produced in my humble beginnings over there in the Stockyards. We did the very first Texas High Life record.
Yeah.
We've been friends for a long time.
Absolutely.
And he just, a listener to the podcast, he needed to be on there. His story told. He's been out there. So welcome, Blake Myers.
Yeah, good to be
finally,
here,
finally, at long last, Trinidad World Recording.
I know. We've been dancing around this for like 2 years,
I know, man.
Man.
You're like, I'm going to make it up there sometimes. Well, that day has come to pass. Well, what has been going on? I mean, we met each other playing. You guys, the old High Life band, would open for us or play shows with us. Gosh.
Sidecar Pub was
Sidecar
the start.
Pub.
Yeah, we remember it vividly because we were way underage and they were serving free Ziegenbach that night. The first night we played with P2 and the full band.
Oh, that's so good to hear. And y'all opened for us a couple times at Fitzgerald's.
Firehouse. Woody's Tavern here in Fort Worth.
Oh, man.
We've been playing together
everywhere.
We've been playing together 7 years, man.
So when y'all were trying to get your first kind of like feet wet album or something, where else to turn but to that old guy, Phil, who's got a couple of mics in an abandoned space in Fort Worth.
You talk about it like that, but there was such an essence to the Stockyards, man. I mean,
it was, oh, man.
It wasn't recording a record as much as it was a life-altering experience, man, really, because, you know, it's such a cool space and this historic space, but it also lent to, like, I mean, we partied crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
a lot of
people didn't know this, that you were above a place called the Cadillac.
Right.
And every day that we were recording, we had to stop at 4 o'clock because they'd kick on the jukeboxes. And like I said, it was an older building.
Yeah,
so
it'd be loud up there.
It would be loud. So the only thing we knew to do as, you know, good citizens of these United States was to walk over to the Elephant and
start drinking
beer at 4:30.
That's right. That's just how it was, man.
And it was fun. When you came to Trinidad, you knew that, you know, like you were going to put in a hard day's work, but you were going to be pleasantly rewarded with some cold beer and some good friendly faces down there at the White
Elephant. Since we're being kind of a family man, 9-to-5 guy like myself, pays off for you bands.
See, absolutely.
Everybody wants to record all night. I'm like, no. I record about 9-to-5, man. About 5, we're done. We've been in there. So if you're one of these guys that, man, my voice just doesn't come into being till about 3 a.m, I'm like, then you need to go somewhere else because I'm not awake at 3.
Well, that's not
not
entirely true.
One night we did go late.
Well, y'all
were doing the deal where you drive in town. You're just camping out. We're knocking out the whole thing.
Basically, yeah.
Basic tracks, yeah.
And what happened was we went, it was one of those regular days. We went to the White Elephant at like 4:30 and, you know, the full.
Watching McCoskey play.
McCoskey and South giving us their preacher sermon on the Texas music scene,
but
Stu Wiley shows up,
things started to get crazy.
And I don't know the whole story. All I know is I was sitting there drinking beer, and about 8:30 after 4 hours being there, you, Mitch, and the rest of my band have left.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I come moseying up the Stockyards like a lost little puppy, and I can hear you guys from the street, and y'all are singing Down in the Stockyards.
Yeah, yeah.
A song.
Just making up a song.
Making up words as
making
we went.
Making up a song.
One microphone.
That's right.
And I remember coming back the next day to try to re-record it because we thought it was so cool.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
None of us remembered anything.
Yeah, that's right. No one. It was just one of those moments. It just had to be captured in time. Well, that was exciting and also a bit terrifying for me as a novice quote unquote producer. I mean, I had recorded my own band,
right?
you know, and so I could play that off and say, ah, you know, this is how we're going to do it. And the only other projects I'd done up there were a guy named Ty Wick, a good singer-songwriter, and I think we'd done J.D. Clark and a couple of these other guys, you know, local guys.
Yeah.
But where I was playing, I mean, I was playing bass and, like, Stu was playing drums, or Pete Coatney from Ingram's band. So I was kind of in control. And then there's one guy out in the hallway with a guitar.
With a guitar, right.
So y'all were the first band where there's, you know, five guys and everyone's got four guitars and two amps and a drum set. And I was just like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally had eight inputs.
Oh, you know? I had
like a borrowed
drum set because
Mick, I'm just kind of like, sure. Yeah, everybody's got the same headphone mix. I was just kind of like, man, I hope this works. I was like, man, it's a little foreign territory for me.
It was foreign territory. It was our first studio record. You know, we had no idea what we were doing.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't even have, I mean, we had a drum set, but I guess Derek, our drummer, didn't like his set, so he borrowed Dave Bowen's set and brought it up there, and it was this gargantuan set that had no business being
Then he came back and we redid the drums.
We redid the whole thing because he was such a perfectionist. So you can imagine now doing the Rose Hill deal him having to learn somebody else's drum parts.
Right.
You know.
Well, of course, being my space, I wanted y'all to be happy and have fun. And, you know, I didn't want to just say, man, we're not doing this. So I was like, yeah, that's cool. I wanted to do anything to make everyone feel comfortable and make it happen, please everybody. I remember I said, after the first kind of round of mixes, you know, I said, hey, listen to the mixes, and then if you have any little pointers, let me know. Shoot me an email. Hey, man, the vocals are too loud in this song, or so, you know, guys give you maybe a couple of things, you know. And I get a package from FedEx. It's about as big as a phone book. And I open it up, and there's just a stack of papers in there. Most from our beloved Derek.
I forgot.
I start
about
leafing
that.
Through. I'm like, what is this? Just 38 seconds into song one, you can hear the kick pedal squeak. I'm like, okay, just 40 at
so
1 minute 12 seconds. I accidentally click my sticks together as I'm going into the first fill. I'm just like. And you got to remember my machine over here, my Tascam.
Yeah.
No automation. Like when I mixed it, I mean, I was moving the faders myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't have Pro Tools.
No.
I had nothing. You know, I had no automatic mixing. You know, you can go back and, you know, just move the fader down a little bit and just repress the whole deal. So I had to go back to the beginning of the song. If I'd faded in the faders, I had to do everything exactly the same. So it just took me forever to mix it. But I learned a ton doing that, man. I said, man,
do you remember?
I've learned one thing about the bass player's got to be able to hear better.
Right.
The drummer's got to be comfortable. Yeah, you just learn a lot.
Oh, I mean, and I learned a lot there going into the second record where, especially like in your cans, like it's got to be my vocals, the click, and maybe the acoustic guitar. I mean, that's the best way that I, as a singer, I could do it. But do you remember the day that you lost like eight of the tracks on the Tascam? And you couldn't find them?
Oh, yeah.
And my guys wouldn't stop playing guitar.
We had to go. I do remember that.
We had to go walk down the street and get a coffee.
Yeah, and I had to back it up. I think we got up and going again.
No, we did. It didn't take long at all, but it was just
funny this time. But it was, I said, man, y'all have to leave. I gotta figure this out. I hadn't had this machine for like, you know, 6 months or something.
Right, but everybody froze.
Yeah.
Because like we could hear the concern in your voice.
That's a bad deal. Yeah, like, bad deal in recording.
Oh, no, this is like a third week in recording. And
we're
going
to have to re-record the drums for a third time. We're just going to do it over again. So the next time around, you decide we're not going back to the Stockyards with Phil. We'll bump it up just a little bit, and we'll hire Radney Foster. Now, that's a big jump.
Well, it was not as easy as that sounds. We were...
My feelings would have been hurt if you'd just gone to somebody else.
But
Foster, I was kind of like, well, you know, I can't really come to that. So.
Well, it really was a freak deal. Mitch and I were getting kind of stale on the whole Texas High Life deal.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't necessarily have the money to do another record on our own.
Couldn't afford me, so you went to
well,
Radney.
We had some folks that were interested. We had some folks that were interested in investing some money.
Yeah, right.
But we, in good conscience, we wanted to make sure that we were up to snuff, and we didn't feel like we were songwriting wise. I mean, we were just the Texas High Life thing was just so much fun that we.
Right.
We forgot how to be artists and songwriters,
sure.
Or either that, or we never really learned
how
to be artists or songwriters, and so. we kind of scaled back the dates, and we flew out to Nashville, mm-hmm. which you've done before, mm-hmm. and to see the scene and sure. to learn things, and we got told we sucked.
Oh, yeah?
Straight up. And you guys suck. You guys look good together, but you yeah. can't, you know, can't sing worth a lick, and you can't write.
You know, they're like, man,
we haven't heard a single song of yours that has a bridge in it. We're like, a bridge?
What is that?
Who needs a bridge when you got some screaming guitar?
That's right, man.
You know, so we came back to Texas knowing that we wanted to do something different, and we wrote for 6 months solid.
Yeah.
Every Tuesday and Thursday.
So how'd you hunt down? How'd you hunt down Radney?
That's the funny part. Mitch and I found like four or five
listeners to the Phil Pritchett podcast will know, of course, Radney Foster,
yeah.
great songwriter, and has produced got tons of stuff.
He's been a great
Randy
mentor.
Rogers. Yeah. I mean, who else?
Jack Ingram, Brandon Ryder.
Yeah.
He's written for Wade Bowen.
Tons of
them.
All those guys.
Roger
yeah.
Craiger and bigger names.
Somewhat of an elder statesman of the scene. You know.
Well, it's crazy to think of the fans of his. I mean,
yeah.
Darius
oh, yeah.
Rucker is titling his new record Charleston, of South Carolina.
Hootie and the Blowfish fame.
Yeah. And as an
yes.
ode to Radney, he's titling his next record Charleston, South Carolina, 1966.
Right. Now, I heard a rumor that you did. You went to a Radney Foster get together. Darius Rucker.
Yeah, we did the 50th.
Yeah,
did the 50th
okay.
birthday party up there, right?
And the great Vince Gill was there.
Hilarious.
Now
by
you
the
told
way.
Me that Vince Gill may be a Phil Pritchett fan.
Let me
is
let
that
me give
true?
You the rundown.
Now what was the rundown on that?
Let me give you
I was
the
like,
rundown.
What are you talking about?
First off, I mean this is after.
No,
Radney.
No one believes it when I tell it. So I'm going to tell you. Let you.
I will tell it exactly how it went, and I can, you can never tell. You never tell of this guy.
The great Vince Gill.
Just to, what had ended up happening is we had.
This was at the Exit Inn.
This is at the Exit Inn.
The great Exit Inn, Nashville, Tennessee.
Well, the way we got hooked up
Radney
with Radney,
50th birthday party.
In the chronological order of things is we put together like a 4-track demo we recorded
right.
on a little Tascam mm-hmm. that Mitch had, mm-hmm. you know, and our friend, your friend, Kyle Hutton, who does
yeah,
a Real Afro
sure.
Music series, like 2 weeks later, Radney was doing that acoustic,
mm-hmm.
and Kyle slipped him a copy of this, you know, this little crappy acoustic guitar and my vocal demo thing. Out of nowhere, the guy calls me 2 days later and says, mm-hmm. I want you to fly to Nashville. I want to meet you guys. I'm interested in producing. That's
yeah.
how it happened.
Right.
A lot of people think that we tracked him down or vice versa. I have no idea how he got that CD.
Sure.
And the good part, the lucky part for us that we tell everybody is it was an acoustic show. Because if it was a full band show, he'd have been on the bus and that CD would have been in the trash.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was an acoustic show. He's nothing but him and Ebo in a rent car with
yeah.
no music.
Right,
so
right.
that's how the Radney Foster
sure.
thing happened. Well, it took us a while to do the record because he was putting out Revival, his mm-hmm. latest record.
His own album. Yeah,
and he
right.
had those two big 50th birthdays planned.
Right.
One in Austin, which had
right.
everybody from Pat Green to Cor Morrell, Kevin Fowler
right.
coming, you know, even Dennis Quaid was there. And,
yeah.
And then he did, 2 days later, he did the same thing in Nashville.
Right.
And Nashville had, you know, Darius Rucker, Dirk Bentley, the Hootie himself,
yes.
who was a straight up guy, let me just
yeah,
tell you.
Yeah, good guy.
And Vince Gill.
Indeed.
And we're sitting backstage, totally starstruck, completely starstruck, because let me just tell, you know, the P2 world out there, I'm a huge Hootie fan.
Yeah,
have
sure.
been forever.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he only sold 16 million copies of Cracked Rear View, you know.
Yeah.
And so I was a little bit starstruck. And then we're sitting back there drinking Heinekens. Radney's a big Heineken drinker, so they
yeah.
have sponsorship. We're just sitting there drinking Heinekens. And in walks Vince Gill, who, if you've never met him, is about 9 feet tall.
Yeah, yeah, big guy.
He's a big guy. Yeah. And he's sitting there. We're all dressed to the tilt, you know. We're in Nashville, like, second time ever. And we're all yeah. trying to be all, you know, posers is what
sure.
I would call it.
Trying to blend in.
He walks in blue jeans, some loafers, and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And he's got this giant Sonic cup.
Mm-hmm.
And he walks up, and Mitch and I are like, oh, my God, it's Vince Gill. And he goes, hey, fellas, looks like y'all are here for the free beer as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just sat down, and we started chit-chatting,
yeah.
and, you know, back and forth. And he, it's like every line we said, he would crack a joke. He's the funniest guy ever.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, what have you done lately? I said, a couple years, you know, a year and a half ago, we cut a record with Phil Pritchett. And he goes, Phil Pritchett, I know that name. And I said, yeah, yeah, he did High Tide of the Heartland. He goes, I think I have that record.
Oh, come on.
That's exactly how it played out.
Did you admit? Y'all had to just kind of like,
before,
oh,
and before we could really grasp the whole deal, like, because Mitch was in the restroom. I'm sitting here. It's me and Matt Kaysen, who's our videographer, lives here in Fort Worth. And I look at Matt Kaysen, and Matt Kaysen behind the camera just goes.
Yeah, right. Just
you know, like,
ooh.
No way.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the time I tried to get in there and go like, how do you know Phil Pritchett? And do you know this and know that? They called him up to stage.
Yeah, got it.
Which he wouldn't sing, by the way. He would only play guitar, which was interesting.
That is interesting.
But another interesting thing about that night is I got to see in all of his glory Mr. Leroy Parnell.
Oh, yes.
Play guitar and sing Foldin' Money with Radney. That was a trip.
That's
man.
Good stuff, man. But I saw Leroy play at the Exit Inn with Pat Green during one of those Billy Block Americana, whatever, when I was living up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good player, man.
Well, that's the thing. For the normal, you know, country music listener, they know mm-hmm. Leroy Parnell from his songs and from being a, you know, he had a few hits.
Sure.
A star and everything. It's like Vince Gill. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows these guys are phenomenal guitar players, you know?
Yeah. Well, when is the new record? So the new ready, it's all ready.
The new record, and this is...
Rose Hill, we've got it here. White Lines and Stars.
We may have gone to Nashville and done a record with Radney Foster, but we still stick true to our days that things we learned from Mr. Phil Pritchett and the Trinidad Studios is it's already out. We didn't have any hard release date. We didn't do any CD release parties. We just put that sucker out.
Put it out there.
And see what everybody
playing.
Thinks
So you've been going around doing the radio thing, talking to people.
Radio tour, We're back on radio tour. Mitch couldn't make it with us. He's has some family issues that he had to take care of in Phoenix with his grandfather. So I'm kind of out doing, we're the duo, but I'm doing it solo.
Yeah, man.
And, it's a trip, man. A lot of people, you know, don't know that, you know, I hear you talk about sometimes the quote-unquote glamorous life of a musician.
Indeed.
A radio tour is 85% driving.
Yeah, that's really all it is.
And about 15% excitement because you're driving. I mean, we've basically done the entire state of Oklahoma.
And the best destination is just to get an 18-minute segment on the P2 podcast.
Absolutely.
Here you are.
I'll tell you one thing.
We almost had Radney come on. I mean, I met Radney at several times, the Mucky Duck, I met him that night in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was playing here, like in Waxahachie, the theater down the road.
Yeah.
And we went back and forth in emails. It didn't work, but yeah, I'd love to get him on here, man.
I know he'd love to do it. And you'd have to have like a 3-hour segment, though.
He's out playing again, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. We do shows again. We did Green Hall. They did Green Hall the other on July 2nd. And there was more people at my sound check than are at regular Rose Hill shows.
Is that yeah.
You know, we've been doing a couple shows together, and he plays. Yeah. You know, his band's really tight, and they get out and play Texas. I mean, they really only play Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
He just did an acoustic tour with an odd pairing, if you ask me, but it was an acoustic tour with him and Jewel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did.
That's
like
interesting.
Coast to coast from Seattle to New York City.
I'll be darned. Like doing songwriter type venue type
basically,
things.
Basically, yeah. So that was kind of a trip.
Jewel and Radney Foster, man. Shoot, man, I'd love to see that show.
Yeah, pretty interesting, you know. And that's the thing. He's pretty much willing to do it. And these people that love his music are not just the fans. I mean, Keith Urban's on his fifth Radney Foster cut with I'm In.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he will go on record saying that he's Radney's his favorite songwriter.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just
what are
a
some
trip.
Of those other cuts Radney's had lately? I mean, of course, he's written a lot for the Randy Rogers, the Texas guys. But some of the bigger ones, he had the Sarah Evans cut.
Yeah, he did the Sarah
Real Fine Place to Start. Was that hers? That his?
Yeah, Real Fine Place to Start, yeah.
And Urban's cut, yeah, several.
Urban, he did a couple. He did two for the Dixie Chicks. He writes for Jack.
Right.
He writes with Jack and Kreger and Wade Bowen and all those guys. It's just like every once in a while you just show up and somebody. I mean, I know Darius is doing two of his two Radney songs.
That's what Radney told me in Chicago, man. He goes, man, you just got to write those songs, hand them around, work with people. And it floats on for a little while, then he just kind of leans across and goes, but every couple years or so, man, I hook a Marlin, man.
A Marlin, that's what he said. I remember when
you get a big one in the boat, you're like, oh,
well,
man.
Well, he also does a very good job of surrounding himself with some really, still Texas roots, but really good songwriters.
Yeah.
Like we co-wrote on the record with Jay Clemente, who, you know, co-wrote Sweet and Wild for Dierks
mm-hmm,
Bentley,
right.
And he's got a new cut on Darius's record. But George Dukas.
Yeah. George Dukas.
Loves driving Joe. A lot of folks would know him. He co-wrote Always the Love Songs for Eli Young.
Lipstick Promises. That was a big hit. Early 90s.
He's got another single out right now of his own. He's back touring. He's playing Armadillo Palace last week.
Is he really? Dukas.
And then the other one that a lot of people don't realize is he co-wrote Just Call Me Lonesome with Radney Foster.
Is that right?
That was one of his first cuts when he got to Nashville.
Heartbroken then some.
Yeah.
Me and a big group of guys went to see AC/DC when I was living in Nashville. We went with Dukas. Dukas and Jim Beavers, another great songwriter, and my music attorney, Matty Adams. And anyway,
Dukas is a trip, man. I love it.
I don't know him very well. I've just met him, you know.
He's a, it always blows my mind. He'll tell people he's from Houston, but he's the most diehard San Diego Chargers fan I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was funny because we were co-writing with Jay Kamini, who's the most diehard Denver Broncos fan ever. Oh. So we'd be writing like our single and the title track of the record, White Lines and Stars. And Jay would throw a line out and Dukas would just give him a look like, no.
Yeah, right.
And back and forth, and you could tell it was like, you know, the Denver Butting sucks. Heads. You know?
Well, Blake Myers has been here. Rose Hill, White Lines and Stars. It is out there now. Produced by the great Radney Foster. It sounds great, looks great. It's in a Phil Pritchett approved slim cardboard vinyl type casing.
That's right.
Lovely. Lovely.
I knew you would dig that, man. I knew. We've had a lot of talks in Trinidad late into the evening about it. Why not? You know, I mean, most people are buying off iTunes now anyway, so, you know, why not just make it easy and simple for them?
Indeed.
Everybody?
Well, check it out. White Lines and Stars, Rose Hill. Check it out. And just remember, they got their start right here with P2. Well, coming up, folks, we got more for you. In the vault, we're going to wander over there next.
Oh, it's so funny to be seeing you after so long, girl. And with the way you look, I understand that you were not impressed. But I heard you let that little friend of mine dress. I'm not gonna get too sentimental like those other sticker Valentines, 'cause I don't know if you are loving somebody. I only know it isn't mine. This world is killing you, oh, Allison. My aim is true.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, joining you every week from right here in Trinidad World Recording. How are you doing, everybody? Thanks to Blake Myers for dropping by. Rose Hill, Radney Foster, the new record is out there. Check it out. We sure appreciate him dropping by. Especially the old, you know, the old guard, the old bands that I started producing in the stockyards there. Just to see him out there still doing stuff, scrapping around, making it happen. Good to see Blake again, man. Thanks for coming by, my friend. Hope you, all of you are enlightened by that segment. Oh, man, look out. All country guys, run for the cover. Even though he himself, Elvis Costello, was a big country fan. This is a guy, I'm like, oh, man, he's so weird, man. Those glasses, what are you talking about? I didn't know anything about Costello, man, until I was, like, really in the working world. You know, age 22 or so. I mean, I knew who he was. I knew some of his songs. But there's a guy at my office, Brian, who was a real music guy when I first was working as a paralegal in Austin. Jeez. There's another show right there for you. Phil the paralegal. There I was. He goes, man, you need to get into Costello, man. So I was like, well, I know watching the detectives and Allison and stuff like that. But I got a hold of his greatest hits, started working my way through it, and man, it just quickly became apparent that he was my kind of guy. An outsider. Just a spit-in-your-eye kind of guy, full of piss and vinegar and vitriol. Kind of a punk, man. He was kind of inspired by the other British bands of the day. Costello came out late 70s, out of England. Original name is Declan McManus. Changed his name to Elvis Costello. Taken, I think it's his mother's maiden name was Costello. And then, in his words, he wanted to find one of the most offensive first names you could have. One of the most hallowed ground names you could have. So he was Elvis. Elvis Costello just invented himself, playing the jazz master guitar, the bespectacled guy, pigeon-toed feet, just awkward and weird, freaking people out all over the world. But man, he had this crooner kind of style and this rock and roll punk thing that, you know, The Clash and some of the other punk bands of the day really didn't have. He had an ability to craft really good melodies and songs. and was a lyricist, you know, up there with, gosh, any, you know, Dylan or somebody. I'm not saying he's as good as Dylan or comparing him, but at the time, you know, his lyrics were very arcane and weird and profound and humorous and all those things that we love about good songwriting. Costello had it in spades, man. Notoriously hard to get along with. All these guys I like, they're all just difficult to get along with, jerks to the press, all that kind of stuff. But Elvis Costello, man, this is his very first record. My Aim Is True. Allison, y'all know that opening track. My aim is true. Will I see you got a husband now? Man, we used to do this next song. Oh, my gosh. Go on. Do yourself a favor. Go on archive.org. Archive.org, Phil Pritchett. There's a bunch of free stuff you can download. Free live shows we've put on there. Try to find the one that has, it's, I think it was Scruffy Murphy's Waco. Check that out. We do a version of Waiting for the End of the World. Me and Doug Holman and Keith Robinson. We just kick its ass. Oh my goodness. But here's the original version. Waiting for the End of the World. My Aim Is True. Costello on the P2 Podcast. Hiding from a scandal in the national press. They have been trying to get married since they stole a wedding dress. Bizarreness. Costello waiting on the end of the world. Man, this guy has managed to offend and upset everyone. He went into genres where he was not welcome. He famously got into a fight really crashed his career in the early 70s, late 70s. His first record was My Aim Is True, followed by the outstanding and soon to be on the podcast This Year's Model. You know, radio, radio. Certain to be on the podcast, his second record, This Year's Model, fantastic. But then his next record was Armed Forces. You know, Oliver's Army is here to stay. Peace, Love, and Understanding was on there. Accidents Will Happen. Man, his first three records are just great. But it was around the tour of the Armed Forces that he was in a bar in Ohio or something. And as a good punk, he disdained everything classic rock, everything 70s excess. So he runs into the bar, and there's Steven Stills in there. And he and Costello get in a fight. They get in an argument, and there's people, there's witnesses. And Costello was real drunk and everything. So anyway, Steven Stills, like, Costello was just saying whatever. He was like, in his Costello's version was, man, I was just trying to be offensive. I was drunk. I was just going, America sucks and all this stuff. And Stills says, man, what about Ray Charles? He's like, oh, he's an ignorant, you know, and he used several derogatory words. Anyway, this gets all to the press, and he was on the cover of Rolling Stone, you know, as this outcast, and Elvis Costello repents and all this stuff. So there's a big hoopla, man, that he was some sort of anti-American guy, a racist and all this. So anyway, Costello, it really killed his career in America. I mean, he was always a big success in the U.K., in his native England. But in the U.S., man, always kind of a fringe guy. Never really broke through after that incident. And after that incident, man, like, he made a soul album, Get Happy, just an old kind of, you know, Motown-sounding record. Then he made a record called Almost Blue, which was a country album, which just confused everybody. He's done that his whole career. He did the Burt Bacharach thing late in his career. He did a record with the Brodsky Quartet, which is a string quartet. So he kind of fancies himself as this rocker, but also this, he does this band leader type stuff. But an interesting guy, man. Really interesting music all over the map, man. A crooner, a rocker, Costello. Take him seriously. Check him out. This is another great one off that first record. I just wanna wear my red shoes. Elvis.
Just to say it. Oh, I know she's disgusted.
Oh, why's that?
Cause she's feeling so abused.
Oh, that's too bad.
She gets tired of the lust.
Oh, I'm so sad.
That it's so hard to refuse. Can you say that I'm too old when the angels have stolen my red shoes? Oh, I said I'm so happy I could die. She said, chasing after vengeance. Ever since you got me punctured, this has been my sentence. So I used to be disgusted when I try to be amused. Since the wings have got rusted, you know the angels wanna wear my red shoes. But when they told me about the side of the bargain, that's when I knew that I could not refuse. And I won't.
Oh, I know it doesn't need to be said, folks, but don't you know you can get all my music, P2 Music, $4 an album at p2tunes.com. Or just order the catalog card, the P2 drop card. $20 on the website. I personally drop it in an envelope and mail it to you. $20. And there's a little code on the back. You go to our website, type in the code, you download every record we've ever made. It's that simple. 13, 14 albums, something like that. 130 songs or something. Get it all. Get caught up on your P2 stuff, man. all these other bands, they write 10 songs. They struggle to write 10 songs just to make an album or something like that. Dude, we got stuff everywhere. Live stuff, bootlegs, acoustic, old stuff, new stuff, whatever, man. We try to release it all. Get it all out there to you. We want you to have it all. So check that out. And don't forget to call me to book the band, 817-733-5256. Or shoot me an email, as always, phil@philpritchard.com. Bring us into your backyard, man, with a couple speakers on sticks. We'll blow your neighborhood. We'll blow your mind. Stuart Wiley and Blue, the full band, will be there. Well, thanks for listening this week, everybody. What an enjoyable podcast. Sorry about the rant. Oh, man, just ranting away about health insurance. But hey, what do you deal with, Phil? Well, that's just letting you hear it all. That's what we deal with. I know you do, too. Blake Myers, thank you. Rose Hill, check out the new album. It's out there. Produced by the great Radney Foster. Thanks for dropping by, Blake. And thanks, Elvis Costello. We're going to leave you with the bizarre, the arcane, watching the detectives, man. A little reggae ska type thing. Something to scare all the country fans out there. But man, Costello himself loves country. You can even hear it in his delivery a lot. So check it out. Watching the detectives, Elvis Costello. Well, for everyone else, this is Phil Pritchard on the P2 Podcast. Signing off. We'll see you next week.
Close up of the